Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about anti-aging. What does that word mean? Wow, do I really want to live until I'm 101, 102? Or do I want a better quality of life? Or maybe still, what does it really mean? Does it mean that I might not need this cane I have anymore? Or do we really push our bodies and our systems to the edge and we say, hurry up, fix me, because you know I'm going over the edge. Give yourself a few little boosts, a few little nip tucks, a few knees, maybe a hip, maybe a couple of pins, and you're good to go, right? What is anti-aging? What is this all about? Tonight, my guest is Dr. Stephen Holt. He is a visionary and pioneer of integrative medicine and author of The Anti-Aging Triad, Calorie Restriction, Telomeres, and Stem Cells. No worries, these topics are absolutely great. You might have heard those words tossed around. Hey, especially if you're the West Coast or the North these days. So, Dr. Holt, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
And it's a pleasure to be with you, Jeanette.
And Dr. Holt, don't you think, you know, we've heard these words tossed around, you know, hey, in California, everybody's up on some of these medical terms, and people are starting to hear the words, and we're saying, what's going on? What do we do, right?
Well, that's true, and the book, The Anti-Aging Triad, is an attempt to put together three of the most important areas of aging or anti-aging research that have come to the forefront of medical knowledge in the past decade or two. So we're really looking at the frontier of medicine when we're talking about calorie restriction, when we're talking about telomeres and stem cells.
Well, you know, Dr. Holt, we even look at it. Let's take the words for a second. When we talk about anti-aging, are we talking about looking good, feeling like we're 40 or 30 when we're 60 and 70? Does it mean getting much older, or does it mean having a better quality of life? What are your thoughts?
Well, in an ideal world, we'd love to turn the clock back to youth, but that really hasn't happened. And a lot of so-called anti-aging methodology is, in my opinion, Band-Aid methodology. It's not really science or evidence-based. You know, the idea of having a facelift is obviously a very pleasing and very attractive idea, but it's by no means a solution to anti-aging per se. We're looking these days at science and how we can understand what it is that's aging within us and how we can alter that aging process, which involves a multitude of different factors, some of which we'll get to in our conversations.
You know, don't you think that people think anti-aging, we see it, you know, a lot with certain classes of people that have these perfect faces, like they feel that they are anti-aging, they're looking younger. And that word looking, and it's really all about eye candy. So they're almost using anti-aging and feeling better as an eye candy. What are we pleasing to? Versus, it's almost like putting wax on your car and still knowing that everything under the hood rusted out, right?
Yes, I think that's a very good analogy you've used. The fact that you can create, with plastic surgery and even well-applied makeup, a young, youthful-looking face behind our face, maybe an aged body, which
right.
isn't enjoying good harmony or good health. That's
yeah.
a real issue for a lot of people. And getting at the science of it, we need to look at the factors that we have some scientific evidence concerning their determination of how we age, and then to apply methodology to see if we can interrupt that process. And that's nothing to do with plastic surgery or nothing to do
right.
with haute couture. It's more to do with science and what's valid
mm-hmm.
in terms of interpretation of how we can age with good health, which, of course, is longevity. So we're seeking longevity. We're not just seeking extension of maximum lifespan. We want to grow
right.
old in good health, longevity.
I think it's, you know, when we talk, again, we're talking today with Dr. Stephen Holt. His book is The Anti-Aging Triad, Calorie Restriction, Telomeres, and Stem Cells. But, you know, Dr. Holt, also, too, you know, when I was reading your book, and I said, okay, wait a second, but what is the peak of the bell curve, so to speak? When are we, you know, we are growing and growing and growing, and when do we hit that spot where we now say, now we are on the decline, you know? Because if we are anti-aging, you know, when are you going to hit it? When a disease pops up? When a hip breaks? When you hit a certain age group? Or you when you end up when your medical labs are defunct and all over the place? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's an excellent question. Ideally, we should take steps to anti-age from birth. Using anti-aging, you know, in an improper verbal sense. But the earlier that people start to live a clean life, by that I mean a life that, you know, is not contaminated with anything ranging from environmental toxicity through to things like cigarette smoking or excessive alcohol consumption, all of which tend to shorten lifespan.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that medicine has done a great service and to coming up and saying after the fact, and then their fix-it system, and then their prevention system is saying, oh, well, we want to fear something, so we're going to put a stopgate in place, like vaccines or something like that. And this is not by any means knocking medicine. This is just using these concepts and ideas. But what we're you and I are really talking about today is really about saying, before the machine breaks, think about changing its oil. Before the machine breaks, think about giving it the right nutrition. You know, we can't, you know, we put plants in the ground and we say to them, to the nursery guy, how much sun does that plant need? And what's his answer? I don't know, enough until it grows, right? So really,
right.
we're looking at anti-aging and health mm-hmm. of the body and the mind and the spirit and the whole machine and the universe we're in and all of this stuff. And we're saying, how much sun do you need? How much food do you need? How much light do you need? How much do you need to keep going? And we're really, the answer is pretty much out there. It's, I don't know, enough so that it does its job well, right? Don't you think it's rather obtuse in kind of the idea? How can we even find that idea, right?
Right. And historically, I favor, very much favor, the work of Claude Bernard, who talked about the harmony
mm-hmm.
of life and the reciprocal
right.
Activity within the body, where there was a very integrated response between various organs and the environment. And he introduced, with others, the concept of vitalism, where
right.
we look at really the whole organism in its environment, which
mm-hmm.
we sometimes call Gaia,
mm-hmm.
the general environment we live in. And, of course, we have many challenges these days because we certainly have lived with environmental pollution, and the last century was the time of polluting the environment, and this century is going to be the time of experiencing the long-term pollution of the environment.
Right.
So
right.
We're really at the forefront now of saying to ourselves, look, we've got to change our environmental habits if we are going to have longevity, life and good health, which is extended.
Mm-hmm. Right, because when we turn around and we have interactions with our environment or interactions even with food, we end up with byproducts. And these, I mean, when we think about it and you sit down and you, you know, I said to someone at one time, they had a dish and it had a lot of food on it. It had meat and potatoes and all this other stuff. And they threw it in the microwave and they brought it out and they ate it. And they said, oh, I got one of those good boxes from the mail. You know, they have these nutrition-like foods and I did it great. And I put it in the microwave and came out and I said, okay, can you tell me how much nutrition's in there? And they're like, see, it looks good. I'm supposed to eat it. That's all the right things. But really, if you look at it, what does your body need? Does your body need everything to fill up a dish? Or does your body need certain nutrition? You know, I had a show where I was speaking about nutrition bars. And if you ever look on the back of a nutrition bar, there's nothing about vitamins whatsoever. It doesn't even show up. Yet there was this one bar that I had interviewed, and they had nutrition in it. They had 10% of C, they had a little bit of A, and they had some calcium in there. And I said, whoa, this is revolutionary. You're actually giving me a nutrient instead of giving me stuff. Don't you think that stuff is what has gotten us to this point?
Well, there are good and, I wouldn't say bad, but poor nutrition bars. People have tried to fortify that type of food with a variety of different vitamins. But there's also a lot of food bars that really are more in the wrapping and taste than they are in the health potential.
And we also do it with our food we put on our dish, right?
Absolutely.
We do it with what we're putting on our dish because you talk about calorie restriction, and calorie restriction is not really calorie restriction. What calorie restriction is saying, put the nutrients on your dish and forget all the other garbage. That's how I see it.
Well, it is, and it is somewhat in that way, but more precisely, there are certain things that happen when you restrict calories in your diet, and what you don't want to do is restrict calories but at the same time restrict vital nutrients.
Right.
This is
right.
The concept of the high-low diet, which was really the work of Professor Roy Walford, a very distinguished physician, who talked about the high-nutrient density diet that was reduced in calories. Mm-hmm. And what he was talking about, which may shock some people, is a 30% reduction calorie intake. And that's a relatively small amount of food. So the chance of that occurring in today's population is relatively low. Such that the high-low approach hasn't become popular. It has become tested, and there are certain elements of the outcome of a high-low diet, which are worth reviewing to some degree. In brief, you can have favorable effects on cardiovascular structure and function. You can improve insulin sensitivity. You can increase protein synthesis with the elimination of abnormal proteins. You can modulate the process of orderly cell death, which is called apoptosis. That's something of regulating the growth and death of cells. You can reduce oxidative stress to tissues. That's really an antioxidant effect. you actually, at the same time, in animals, certainly reduce body temperature. And these observations have come from both human and animal studies. There's a reduction in body fat. There's beneficial effects on hormonal secretions, those that tend to fall with age, such as growth hormone. And then, of course, there's improvements in brain function, including memory, cognition, and mood. There's a better spontaneous enhancement of an ability to engage in physical activity. And, of course, the obvious, there's weight loss and the many secondary benefits that occur from weight control, since obesity is a big, big problem for us that we haven't solved yet. If ever there was a circumstance where there was false promises, it would be with many weight loss products and many approaches to the treatment of obesity. But we're looking at more than just being obese these days. We're looking at metabolic syndrome, which for those people not familiar with metabolic syndrome, it's the variable combination of being overweight, having high blood pressure, having insulin resistance, and abnormalities of glucose, blood glucose control. This constitutes the metabolic syndrome, which affects as many as 80 million Americans. Now, this comes as a shock to many people, but there are 80 million Americans with that variable combination in variable severity. So this is a real public health initiative we're looking at. When people talk about addiction, and sometimes you see obese people talking about addiction to drugs, when really the issue is addiction to food. Our addiction to food, especially the wrong type of food, caused enormous ill health, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, you name it, arthritis, liver disease. All sorts of different disorders come from excessive intake of the wrong kind of food.
You know, if we think about it, you know, in the way I live in New Orleans, this is the land of excess. Alcohol, sugar. Sugar was the number one product out of the state this year. Louisiana was the number one in producing it this year. White rice, and everything is fried. It's just what it is, as they say. However, when you think about it and you sit down and you speak to people and you say, you know, is there a reason that you have to have 10 glasses of soda with your meal? And they're like, well, it washes it down. Well, it does this, it does that. Or you'll ask another person, you'll say, gosh, I would say, oh, that food, it just doesn't make me feel good. And they're like, oh, I don't know, I don't taste my food. I had 5 drinks before I started, so it didn't matter. You know, I think our concept and the way in which we are responsible as people is really the first step. Because unless you have a grasp on it, all of this other conversation we're having is really going out the window. Because really, if you understand that, you know, what I've always wanted someone to do is to get a great big garbage can, you know, and everything that you eat in one day, I want you to replicate it and pour it into that garbage can. And I want you to leave that garbage can there for a week and tell me what happens to that. And then you say, oh, it's only garbage, whatever. I said, but you just put that in your body and you expected your physical body to do something with it? How profound would that be, Dr. Holt? Don't you think that that would be impossible for someone to deny that they've got a problem?
Yes, I think so. And I think we tend to think conveniently when we're eating. We tend to say to ourselves, oh, I'll have some of this, I'll only have a little bit. But a little bit turns into a lot, and people run into problems. But metabolic syndrome is sometimes referred to as metabolic syndrome X. And syndrome X is sometimes referred to as syndrome X, Y, and Z. And the reason for that is that metabolic syndrome not only is manifest by the obvious cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, you also see an increased prevalence of cancer, you see an increased prevalence of liver disease, and many other disorders that go hand in hand with metabolic syndrome,
right.
X. Hence the terminology X, Y, and Z. And these sinister problems hang out together in the metabolic syndrome, as I've mentioned. Obesity, high blood pressure, glucose problems, and insulin resistance. They constitute the metabolic syndrome, added to which is abnormal blood lipids. The fats in the blood are usually abnormal, with high blood cholesterol and high blood triglycerides, two types of fatty substance.
It's too much stuff going into the factory, and you can't process it, and then you end up residual. I mean, it's basically that. If you seriously broke our conversation down today, it's you're putting too much into a machine, you're asking it to do something, and then you end up with all this waste product you have nothing to do with. That's why you end up with inflammation. You've got too much in there. Sugar, you've got too much in the blood vessels, and you end up with, you know, neuropathies and stuff. You know, in your brain, you end up with residuals of there that don't belong there. You know, even with the telomeres, it starts, you know, they just can't, your body is so pristine when it's born, it can't take what we in this day and age of 2018 is throwing at it, don't you think?
Yes, I think that's true. You know, food processing has become very complex science, but because
right.
it's complex science, doesn't mean that it's healthier necessarily than raw foods or more basic types of food.
Right.
But I stress this idea, calorie restriction should be associated with nutrient density, a dense
right.
amount of nutrients in the food we eat. And this is a pivotal issue. Now, the real frontier of this whole area is the use of something called, or some things called, calorie restriction mimetics. And a mimetic just means it mimics something. And there are substances, many of which are natural in origin, that can be used together to minimize the adverse effects of calorie excess. And these are called calorie restriction mimetics. And I list these in my book and go into some detail about them. And they include a variety of different substances which are freely available, which people can take, including, I'll give a list, including drugs, some drugs, and some natural agents. We can increase insulin sensitivity with metformin and reduce gluconeogenesis, that's the genesis of sugar, inhibit excessive absorption of sugar. Resveratrol stimulates a gene which promotes DNA structure and function. Pterostilbene, an example of a compound commonly associated with resveratrol, is beneficial, as are a number of other things. And if I go through them, people will start to say, I wonder, these restriction mimetics, there's so many of them. Carnosine, avocado, gymnema, C-glucose, hydroxycitrate, adiponectin, modulators of certain hormones, exandin, leptin, alpha-lipoic acid, cinnamon, acetyl-L-carnitine, mixed antioxidants, and oxaloacetate. These are all calorie restriction mimetics that have been researched to a variable degree, largely in animals, But we have human experiments now showing that calorie restriction in adults can prolong beneficial health and can prolong life. Probably the pivotal study of all was a study performed in chimpanzees where one group were put on a free diet where they could eat what they want, and the other group of chimpanzees were put on a calorie-restricted diet, restricted by in calories by about 30% in comparison to the free-feeding chimpanzees. And there was less heart disease, less diabetes, and longer life with better general health in the restrict group. And this, I think, is really very interesting. And we now have some observations in humans that this is the case, that restriction of calories is associated with health and longevity.
You know, I think if we, your book, The Triad, really is if we stop putting in what's overusing the machine, if we say, okay, now look at let's look at all my damage, and that would be looking at your telomeres and see where you need to redo some work. And then you say, okay, now I need to reverse this chain. That would be the stem cells. Because pretty much it's almost like, all right, I hit the wall. Now what do I do? And this is definitely your book, The Anti-Aging Triad, is about if you're hitting the wall or you'd rather not hit the wall, this is potentially a definite, you know, handbook to be able to say, I think I need to look at my life and my body in a different way, because apparently the way I've done it in the past is not serving me. I might have a chronic disease. I might have inflammation. I might not be doing well. You know, when we talk about telomeres, and Dr. Holtz, if you could share about that in a second, I always think of telomeres as, you know, it's just like almost like something that's just going around and spinning. It says, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it anymore, and they break off, you know. It's sort of like it's almost like a self-destruction kind of secret thing that's going on in your body where after chronic disease, it says, it's almost like your last resort, because when your telomeres are gone, you might not be able to do that coming back kind of thing, you know, no matter what, no matter how you try. You know, some people we say, oh, they came back. Well, maybe they had, you know, a stronger life force. Maybe they had didn't have so much DNA damage. Maybe they had the right tools. But really what we're talking about today is catch it before you hit the wall and see what you can do about it. So can you share a little bit about what telomeres actually are and why they're so important?
Of course. Telomeres are caps of DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, that are found on linear chromosomes, chromosomes as found within the nucleus of a cell, and they function to prevent aberration or loss of genetic information during cell division. So if you like, you can think of them as a barometer of age. They tend to decrease in size with age and are associated with decreased size in a number of chances of ill health. So in brief terms, that's the telomere, and you can reverse telomere shrinkage by inducing an enzyme called telomerase, which is not normally expressed in tissue without some special induction. So we don't walk around loaded with telomerase and we lose our chromosome caps over a period of time. So that's really what telomeres are. And of course there are certain circumstances that telomeres are known to be affected in, which can be partially amenable to the application of natural agents. For example, omega-3 fatty acids have been shown in a group of patients with coronary heart disease to increase, obviously, the level of omega-3 fatty acids in the blood and be associated with telomere support. Antioxidants are the same. The rate of telomere shortening is enhanced by oxidative stress, stress-free radical stress,
right,
people have heard about. Antioxidants are protective against telomeres, as are vitamin D, folate, B12, nicotinamide, multivitamins in general. There's a special compound derived from astragalus called TA65, and this has been proposed as a way of lengthening telomeres, most likely by attrition of telomeres. Then there are other compounds described. Chinese ginger root, alpha-tocopherol, which is vitamin E essentially, N-acetylcysteine, statin drugs. Treatment with statins increases lymphocyte telomere length. That's the length of the telomere on the chromosome in a white cell. And finally, ginkgo biloba. So we have a whole host of supporting agents for telomeres that we can look at in terms of the future of managing telomere shortening, which is what we want to avoid. And telomere shortening determines cell survival in the long term. If you've got more healthy divisions of cells, you've got a longer, healthier life ahead of you. It's very important. I hope that gives people a clear idea of what telomeres are.
So, Dr. Holt, do you think that telomeres are pretty much, are they a contributing factor to chronic disease, or are they, in essence, the chronic disease in all its glory? In other words, it almost is like when you get to a certain point with chronic disease, you're at the edge of the bridge hanging off the cliff. And potentially, that might be where telomeres might be, right?
I think there's some truth in that. There isn't a complete, clear, direct relationship. But certainly, if you've got short telomeres, you have a shortened lifespan in general. And, you know, we know that telomeres are associated with a variety of situations, such as high blood lipids, cholesterol, and abnormalities of triglycerides. They're high, and they're, of course, among common causes of death. So I think there's some measure of truth in what you're saying here. I like to think of them as a barometer of age. You know, the short telomere indicates you've ticked away to the end of the spectrum of what is healthy.
Right. You know, I kind of think it as, when I think of telomeres, is like, you know, when you've whacked off the edge of the corner, there's not another option to grow a tree there. Do you know what I mean? So in other words, if that piece of that telomere that you needed to come back and reverse your diabetes and all of those little sort of little screws in the mechanism that you needed to be able to do that are now gone, that's pretty much where we're talking about, yes?
Yes, it is. But what I was discussing were some approaches to basically support telomeres from
beforehand
aging. From shortening. And there are a lot of people taking astragalus or various compounds that are known to enhance telomere length. I mean, antioxidants play a role, but you wouldn't think that antioxidants, you wouldn't associate them immediately in your mind with telomere length, but they certainly have a beneficial effect.
You know, when I think of antioxidants, I think of sort of like the ants that are running around at the farmer's market. They're looking for somewhere to whack out, you know. So if you could kind of control them and move them out of there and give them a different place to go, then you have protection. So that's how I think of antioxidants, and I've said it on the radio before, is like you need to be in control of your terrain. You need to be in control of what you're putting into your body, what's around you, what's outside of you, what you're absorbing, what you're breathing, because all of those things are just like an ant farm going crazy. You know, they're going to look for whatever they're looking for. Because you're sort of like this fertile ground providing everything. So the answer is either you're going to provide it and keep yourself healthy, or you're going to let the ants run amok. And what you and I are saying is stop the ants before they get there. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, it's sometimes people say, okay, now I understand. And I think that's really what we're trying to get across, is that there's so much going on, but we're putting it in the simplest terms, yes?
Yes, we're putting it in simple terms. I personally like the analogy of the rusty nail, where, you know, the nail is rusty with its coat of iron, ferrous coat.
Right.
And that's due to oxidation. If you take a nail and you leave it to oxidize, it goes rusty. And the idea of giving an antioxidant is to stop the development of oxidation, the rusty nail. So that's a similar analogy, just from a different angle to the one that you just said, the one that you just described.
Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Holt, going back to the beginning of what we said about when do you start looking at this triad that we're talking about today, which is of calorie restriction, telomeres, and stem cells, is the earlier the better. Because if you look at it right now, probably our genetic code, our DNA, has pretty well taken a hit over the generations. And if we're looking at people of child-rearing ages right now, we always ask them medical history of their family. And then it always ends up replaying and replaying and getting worse after generation after generation. So if we really want to make a change, I think, in the human genome, in the human lives, it's really about let's start changing it from the get-go instead of waiting on the back end. Because it really is great anti-aging, that's fine. However, if you're not of child, you know, bearing age and having kids and reproducing, you're really not making a change in the human race as a whole. If you want to make a change in the human race as a whole, start looking at everything from a younger age, correct? Because if we can start changing our DNA and keeping it and conserving it and keeping it healthy and repairing it, even with stem cells, which we'll get to in a second, and keeping everything intact, and then giving that on as a reproducible state, we are actually, in effect, changing the human race, correct?
Well, we are, yeah, undoubtedly. You know, that's a problem we really do face. Encouraging people to engage in preventive medicine activity is sometimes a monumental task. You know, people will tend to focus in on these items when time has gone too long. I'm not saying they reach, you know, a point of no return, because these interventions have been shown to be beneficial in, you know, mature adults. There aren't that many studies in children. Probably a handful, if that. So, again, of course, you're right with preventive medicine. Prevention is worth a pound of cure. We tend to forget that.
Well, I think eventually, you know, with our conversation today and also your book, eventually people will say, if I'm eating healthier as an adult, then you have your children eating healthy. And you can start back, you know, backtracking and start to help generations coming up. Whereas now people are saying, well, like about smoking and things, you know. It's we're kind of backtracking. Does the grandmother need to smoke around the grandkids? The answer is no, you know. So changing our habits and our lifestyle might also help, don't you think?
Oh, no question. In fact, anything and everything that I've been involves
right.
the backdrop of, you know, good lifestyle choices. You know,
mm-hmm.
you don't just go
mm-hmm.
along and pop a pill and expect everything
right.
to be fine. You've got to work hard at lifestyle with good nutrition, exercise,
mm-hmm.
and just comporting yourself in the right way, avoidance of toxins and the rest of it.
Can you share a little bit about stem cells, Dr. Holt? You know, when I think of stem cells, I kind of think of it as CPR for the cells, you know, or the CPR for the DNA, or the CPR for, hey, I'm hanging over the edge and I don't know what else to do next kind of idea, because it's almost like for many diseases, they are used as the last resort. They are used to attach different types of drugs and mechanisms onto them, lock and key, to transport them to different cell lines, to have conversations and heal people, you know. So stem cells, in a way, I almost kind of think of them as, here comes the ambulance and the rescue system, and, hey, put everything in my trunk, and I'm going to go get it, and I'm going to find it, and I'm going to fix it. Yes?
Well, yes, in broad general terms, but
mm-hmm.
stem cell science is extraordinarily complex.
Yes, yes.
There are many different types of stem cell described. The one that is most worked with is the adult stem cell. But we've seen overseas research going on with embryonic stem cells, which
right.
creates cultural and ethical issues and religious objections in the United States. So
mm-hmm.
we have different cells that have different degrees of stemness. And stemness
right.
is a word sometimes used synonymously with the word plasticity.
Right.
And plasticity is really, if you can change something into something else, the technical term is transdifferentiation. And there are certain cells, notably embryonic cells, that have the greatest stemness. They're called totipotent, meaning that they'll be able to give rise or give birth to cells of all different tissues. And the adult stem cells seem to be a little more restricted. And then, as you alluded to earlier, there are a whole group of stem cells that have been produced by collection of tissues or blood samples and treatment in the laboratory to
right.
have attached certain characteristics that make themselves valuable for the reason for which being developed. In other words,
right.
for specific treatment. But
mm-hmm.
there are a number of agents like telomeres and like calorie restriction mimetics that support stem cells. And they include fatty acids, especially linolenic and oleic acid, antioxidants again, notably spirulina,
right.
green tea, ellagic acid, fucoxanthine, which is a seaweed derivative.
Mm-hmm.
Key nutrient support can be provided with vitamin D3 and vitamin B12. And specific evidence-based stem cell releases exist, such as blue-green algae, vitamin D again, vitamin D3, that is, blueberries, something called fucoidan, which is related to fucoxanthin, beta-1-3
mm-hmm.
glucan, which is what you find in oats, ellagic acid, and some fermentation products. So again, you see how we're moving especially in natural medicine, towards a number of things that will help us to control and manipulate stem cells. And I have a dream about the future, which may be shared by some other people, and that is the day when we don't collect a stem cell. We leave the stem cells where they are in the niches in which they're growing, and we direct the stem cell by giving something in terms of a message for it to go to a different place and deal with ailing or diseased tissue. So, if you like, it's the idea that we might be able one day to control our own internal stem cell reserves by using specific chemical messengers or other compounds that will push stem cells where we want them to go. And that's futuristic.
You know what?
That's
not really, because, you know, as you were speaking, I was also thinking about this too, Dr. Holt, is that when we use stem cells, we say it's always of another entity. In other words, it's usually not our own stem cells, you know? And then I think, so is it maybe at birth that everybody banks their own stem cells? But then I think, are we banking our stem cells to be able to fix our body after we abuse it? Or are we banking our stem cells because we're living in a destroying world?
Well, I think it's ongoing now. In fact, it's turned into a commercial business. Umbilical cord from the baby are collected, the stem cells are collected and stored in a cryo-precipitated form where they could be used subsequently throughout life to deal with certain diseases or to deal with certain problems that you mentioned. But it's not alien, the thought of banking stem cells for future use. It's here and now. It's happening.
But those stem cells that we would be banking, right, are also based upon our DNA at time of birth. So really, we may be born with defective, knocked off telomeres anyway, or missing parts of our DNA anyway. So really, those stem cells won't fix that. What they will just really do is, it's almost like they're going to be a reset. If you're born with a missing piece and you progress to disease, then you might be able to do a stem cell because it'll reset you, more or less, you know. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, because almost if you look at it, wouldn't healthcare revolutionize it? Instead of having drugs, they would say, you were going to pay to have all of your stem cells banked. We are going to keep them, you know, in a controlled place and identify everybody's. And then, you know, that's what you'll use instead of drugs when you get sick at a later time, right?
Correct. Bear in mind, the cryopreservation stem cells is a fairly complex process. You require additives.
Right.
You know, the cells are needy. They need the correct environment so they don't die. But not all stem cells are easy to collect, and not all of them will survive. You will have, if you like, non-viable stem cells in some collections. And obviously it's down to technique. There are a lot of international centers where stem cells are used in treatment programs, and they're not really used correctly, I'm afraid to say.
So are stem cells the best if they're fresh, number one, and number two, potentially from someone else? Because if you've already got a defect of that DNA part and you get a stem cell from someone else, that might potentially fix that defect area. Yes? No?
Well, it doesn't really work like that. the use of stem cells, adult stem cells especially, which are the ones that are most commonly used, usually
right.
collected and used on the same day without manipulation. The Food and Drug Administration and ethical groups have really frowned upon the idea of taking stem cells and modifying them, then reinfusing them. Certainly,
right.
it seems more acceptable to do same day stem cell infusions. But, you know, stem cells, when collected, human adult stem cells, they may have some age to their telomeres, but they don't usually have a simple breakage or a simple dislocation of the telomere that really requires much
mm-hmm.
treatment. And I mentioned those other factors that were important for stem cell support when we talked about
right.
telomeres.
Right.
So it's a slightly different subject, but it does come into this idea of the triad, and the triad
mm-hmm.
is interlinked. Calorie restriction,
yeah.
mimetics, telomeres, and stem cells,
mm-hmm.
I see them as interlinked anti-aging
yeah.
interventions.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, Dr. Holtz, when we think about anti-aging, it's not about how can I run, you know, 100 miles a day like I did when I was 19? Can I turn around and swim like nobody's business across the channel? Or can I do this, that, or the other? It's all about quality of life, and the quality of life is, am I better today than yesterday? And I think that's what I call anti-aging. Am I better today than yesterday? That's great. Then that means I'm turning a tide. And I think the simple things that we look at in life are the ones that really miss us, because we get so stuck on the end result that every day, if we don't have the answer or the goal already in sight and playing out, we miss the days in between, and that's really what it's all about, don't you think?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. That's important. And I like the way you progressed through the discussion, you know, dealing with some of these complex issues, which are far more involved than what we've been able to
right.
cover in this short interview.
Because oh, absolutely.
We could talk for hours about stem cells and how they're used, you know, without even
right.
thinking about anything else.
Yes. And, you know, Dr. Holtz, I think we did a great job, because you know what? It really, for people to understand, hey, if I'm sitting down and every single morning my breakfast is coffee and donuts, then I need to think about, am I doing something more than just having a fat butt or a fat gut? You know, I'm doing something else to my body
yeah.
that maybe I shouldn't be, you know? Or
right.
is it okay at lunch that I sit down and talk to all of my best buds about how many drugs we're taking? You know, my husband, he sits down with about four or five guys, or, you know, women every single day, different ones at lunchtime at work. And they have these conversations about how many drugs do you take? And he says, none, 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 you know, and they're all on four and five and six. And the story goes on. And you just go, wow. Where are we really going as a human race? And I think it's time that, you know, as you and I have these conversations, is about shedding light. You don't really need to keep hanging off the edge. It's not about keep pushing and shoving it in and doing it and using that car until it breaks, you know. Your body is going to break if you continue that way. But, man, I don't know about you, but, I mean, I don't really want to be crawling to the end line, you know. How about you?
No, I'd rather maintain good health. You know, quality of life
is
important.
As long as we can.
But, of course, you know, we have to think about, can we afford these advances in medical science? What I'm talking
right.
about, these techniques and technologies are expensive, and they're not within
mm-hmm.
the reach of the average person at the moment.
That's
Will
right.
Will they be? Well, yeah. There are even theories that the pharmaceutical industry may be not pursuing stem cells because that may reduce the need for drugs.
Right.
Certainly, the pharmaceutical industry is using stem cells as ways of looking at new drug development. But, you know, there's always this double-edged sword here, and in the book I do scratch the economics of this situation. Are we able to afford this kind of healthcare? Mm-hmm. There's a big, big movement of what I call stem cell travelers, people who take vacations overseas to obtain stem cell treatments, which are of variable benefit and variable quality.
Mm-hmm.
And such people are usually elite when it comes to finances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have a lot of money to pay for these services, and it's not going to come easy.
You know, I
That's
think
why
also
I concentrate
too in...
on...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's why I like to look at natural things without, you know, anything else. I mean, people have even started to look very carefully at spirituality and mindfulness and their effect on stem cells. And it's quite surprising. There are very notable effects which, you know, most informed people would anticipate.
Yeah. You know, I think in closing, you know, I think what we're really talking about is about figuring out that is the extreme, but you can also do something about it in the meantime. You can watch what you put in. You can look at some supplements. You can look at some herbs. You can look at different things in Dr. Holt's book. And I think what's very important also, too, is to look at the quality of what you're purchasing in both food and any of these supplements or herbs. And also, too, to think about, you know, if you have insurance, you can also always have the separate spending one, and for the lack of me, it just went off the top of my head. The additional spending account where you just put in money every month, and then you can use it for incidentals like herbs or supplements, you know, and that's tax-free.
Yes.
But, you know, taxes are changing all the time too. But I also caution people is that things that are of poor quality, whether or not they have that label on there, are going to hurt you. So you really need to be careful what you're purchasing. And I think you and I, you know, share that message all the time is find someone who can help guide you through that and say, maybe I wouldn't buy that one. Maybe I'd buy this. And they'll say, oh, you know, I have people all the time. I spoke with someone the other day about hyperbaric oxygen, and they said, I really can't afford that, you know. We're going to Africa for the summer, and, you know, I really didn't want to do that. So it's really about what is your priorities, what is your thoughts, and what are you really living for? Are you living for things, you know, stuff and an existence, or are you looking to create a body that's able to still keep going on? What do we really need in this world? And I think that's really where we're going to be coming to some hard decisions as healthcare and our lives change, don't you think?
Yes. Yes, I completely agree.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough place. Dr. Holt, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Yes. Well, on the internet, I have a website, which is Stephen Holt, M.D. That's Stephen, spelt with a P-H, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Holt.com, M-D.com. I work with a company called Natural Clinician, naturalclinician.com. They produce certain supplements. I also have a number of books that have recently been published. They're displayed at holtbooks.com, holtbooks.com. Before the actual Hope books and before all of these URLs is www. So that's a way of getting through. And if anybody had personal questions or wanted to know more, they could call 973-256-4660. Repeat, 973-256-4660. That should give people plenty to get on with.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Holtz, I hope potentially you'll come back in the future and talk about some of your other books. I think it was a great discussion because we really kind of wanted to walk through these ideas. A lot of those words are out there, and it's sort of like we're trying to put them into a sentence so that you could have a little bit more of a conversation with your doctors, yes?
Well, that's it. I was trying to make sense of these things where people will say, oh, telomere, yes, I've heard of that.
Yes.
What is it?
Yes.
You know?
Right.
What does it mean? You know,
yeah.
What does it mean to my health? So
right.
These books really are overviews and abstracts of literature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'll be honest, you cannot cover the topic of stem cells in approximately 60 pages that I have in the book. You can't do it, you know.
Right.
And be complete.
Right.
You can only give an outline and overview.
Yes. Well, Dr. Holt, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I thank you so much for joining us.
And it was very kind of you to invite me. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Stephen Holt, again, on the bottom of today's show page is the link to go directly to his website. Please do check it out because there's a lot of information there. And as we've said today on the show, it's really about looking at your body in a different way. You've got to start saying, you know, something's just not working here. I don't know what's going on, but maybe I can make a change. Maybe I could try to do something different, and maybe I could just say, hey, I don't want to be like this. Maybe I can do something even more to help future generations and really change the world. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for joining us.
If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule